You're listening to Christian Talk 660 and 92.9 FM. This is Christian Worldview with Tony and Hannah. To be a part of our program, dial toll-free 1-888-660-WLFJ. That's 1-888-660-9535. Then you can talk to our hosts, Hannah Miller and Dr. Tony Beam.
Just Tony Beam. Hannah Miller is still out with on maternity leave. And I understand Emily Reagan's doing really well. They're calling her Emma Ray. So hopefully Hannah will be back one of these days. Good to have you listening to the program this morning. Thanks for tuning in. A lot of choices. Thank you for making this one. This is Tony Beam. I'm the Director of Church and Community Engagement for the Tim Brazier Campus of North Greenville University, where Christ makes the difference. All right, a lot of stuff to talk about today. Some of the stuff didn't get to yesterday. But I'm going to dive in here this morning with a column from Ben Shapiro that is essentially, hopefully, well, we're never going to wrap up the Jussie Smollett case. I think it's going to just go on and on and on, and we're going to find out more and more. You know, yesterday we have found out that the letter, you know, supposedly Jussie Smollett got mad because there was a letter that was sent to the press or sent to him that he sent to the press that was very critical of him and homophobic, and it was from a MAGA person, a Trump supporter. And now we find out that Jussie Smollett very likely wrote that letter himself, to himself. So all of this, every bit of it, has been a hoax to try to get you to feel sorry for Jussie Smollett and to see that he's a victim of something. And Shapiro writes today three lessons that we should learn from the Jussie Smollett case. And I want to go through those because, in my opinion, Shapiro is one of the sharpest minds in the country and when it comes to conservative thought and also just the way that he kind of puts things together. So first, alleged victims sometimes have an incentive to lie. I think we need to realize that. And I think the media and people in talk radio, like me, I stayed away from this story until it was deep into it. I mean, it'd been out for a week, and everybody was talking about the lynching that Jussie Smollett had received and how terrible it was and these bad Trump people, and I just stayed away from it. And one of the reasons is I'm starting to learn the hard lesson that it doesn't always pay to be first and to jump in on a gravy train before you're certain that it's on the right track. I mean, it's just a lot of people are being pulled into stories that it turns out are not true. And then they have to do a lot of backtracking. And this is particularly true for politicians. I mean, when you look at Kamala Harris and Cory Booker and some of the others that are out there running for president, you know, they think somebody shoves a microphone in their face and, what do you think about the Jussie Smollett story? Oh, it's lynching. It's worst. It's just what's terrible about America, and it's all Trump's fault. Nancy Pelosi was guilty of that. Of course, Chuck Schumer, all the usual suspects. And they immediately jump on a narrative that fits their perception of who Trump voters are. And it does two things. First, they have their own perception of who Trump voters are, and this fits the narrative. But the second thing is it also supports and sort of furthers their political agenda, which is the undermining of President Trump at every turn. This is just another one. This is just another. If you can imagine, they're standing on the edge of a landfill. Okay, and they're hoping to push Trump in there someday. But right now, they're just throwing stuff in there, hoping that the weight of it is going to eventually drag Trump down into the landfill too. So it fits into all of those categories. So it just makes sense to wait. Just hang on. Some fantastic story comes out, you know, like a guy going to get a Subway sandwich and ends up with a noose around his neck. I mean, maybe that's true. There are bad people in the world, but maybe, just maybe, there's no truth to it, which is what it's beginning to look like in this case. All right, Ben Shapiro goes on. For several years, each time an alleged victim tells an unverified, unverifiable story, we're told that we must believe the victim story. Why? Because why would the victim lie? But this is often untrue. Smollett had an incentive to lie, unending media attention, fawning, sycophancy from politicians and the potential for even greater Hollywood stardom. So in other words, yeah, the Hollywood, the elite sycophants who are always looking for somebody to victimize, or not to victimize themselves, but to glorify in that person's victimization. From politicians and the potential for even greater Hollywood stardom, if Smollett had gotten away with this hoax, he'd be in the face of gay, black suffering in the United States. In other words, that he's able to elevate his political platform in the midst of all this. So, second, hoaxers can read the tea leaves. There's a reason that the most prominent racial and sexual hoaxes have generally flattered the political sensibilities of the political left. Right-wing hoaxes might catch the attention of right-wing sources, but left-wing sources are far more powerful and plentiful. Imagine if a MAGA-hated young Republican had accused two young black men of assaulting him while shouting F Trump. That story might get play on talk radio and Fox News, but it wouldn't earn one iota of attention from the celebrity culture or the mainstream media. So you get what we're talking about here. If you've got a young Republican who happens to be wearing a MAGA hat, and he accuses two young black men of assaulting him while they're insulting President Trump or hurling some kind of profanity at President Trump, then I'm probably going to talk about it. Other talk show hosts that are conservative are going to talk about it. It may get coverage on Fox News on the 5, and it might even make it to the Fox Report with Bret Baier. But it's not going to be mentioned on CNN, CBS, ABC, NBC, the New York Times, the Washington Post, unless it's a small story buried somewhere on page 5 underneath the obituary column in the newspaper, or it's a blurb at the end of a program that is not a mainstream program on any of the liberal cable networks. But you do this as a liberal if you check all the intersectional political boxes as a star or as a political figure or whatever, then you're going to get 24/7 attention. And that story is going to transcend social media. It's going to transcend the networks, the newspapers. Everybody's going to show up. Everybody's going to be supportive. Everybody's going to there you on the back as they're talking about the terrible experience you've been through. And all of a sudden, you're a star for being a victim on top of being a star because you're a liberal. So there, you get a twofer out of it. Stardom from two different directions. So, third, social media make hoaxes infinitely easier. There are large-scale incentives for jumping on every story before the facts are clear, which is why Senators Cory Booker, Democrat New Jersey, and Kamala Harris, Democrat California, both running for president, tweeted their support for Smollett and then had to backtrack radically, suggesting as the hoax emerged that they had to wait for more facts. See, this is such a funny thing to hear from two people that want to be president. They were perfectly willing to proceed without the facts when the facts that they had matched their political template. But when the facts they had didn't match their political template, then all of a sudden they've got to wait for the facts. Well, why do you have to wait for the facts now when you were not willing to wait for the facts earlier? Because now you want waiting for the facts gives you an opportunity to keep from having to fully backtrack and admit that you jumped on this story because you liked it and you thought it would be a cool thing if it was actually true. So this is Shapiro's exactly right. All of this means, and this is wrapping up his column, that the hoaxes won't stop anytime soon. The incentives simply are aligned for hoaxes to end, aren't aligned, rather, for hoaxes to end. Media members are too eager to buy into stories that support their preferred narratives. Social media are too eager to engage in pile-ons of epic proportions. Hoaxers are obviously eager to make a buck or win some fame. That means that we should all wait next time we hear a story too good to be true. But we won't do that. Nobody knows who the next Jesse Smollett will be, but within a few weeks, we'll all know. All right, 1-888-660-WLFJ, 888-660-9535. We'll come back. We've got more. Stay with us.
And here's your host, Dr. Tony Beam.
All right. I haven't had a chance yet to, and by the way, we're going to talk about the Greenville County Sheriff. That's going to come up here at the bottom of the hour. I don't have anybody to talk to on the radio about it, but I'm just going to talk about it. Because the Greenville County Sheriff yesterday was indicted on a couple of charges by a grand jury. So we'll get into that and talk about the Greenville News story about that and coming up in the next segment. But since this story broke on Monday, I haven't talked about the Laura Logan story. And I've actually had people to ask me why that I didn't bring it up, since you've got a former CBS 60 Minutes correspondent who is out there doing a blog post interview with a retired Navy SEAL, basically admitting that the news media is incredibly biased. And I guess the reason that I haven't really, I mean, is this news? Is it, I mean, it may be news that she's decided to throw away her career. I mean, she's finished unless Fox News wants to pick her up, or, you know, I don't know, she goes out and gets her own radio program, or but she's exposed the incredible media bias and talked about it openly, how that the tried and true tested journalistic standard for getting at least two sources before you go to news with a story has been thrown out the window a long time ago. I mean, news organizations now publish stories based on social media reports, which you and I both know are dubious at best. And she says basically that it is a left-wing bias against conservatives, and it does represent a political ideology. For example, she talks about in this interview all of the vitriol, all of the negative news that is about President Trump, that constantly news organizations only speak negatively about the president, even though there's information out there that is positive about the Trump administration. And that's, you know, yes, she's a well-recognized, credible journalist who has been in the business for a while, who is admitting all of this. And what I hear people saying is, see, we told you, we know. And the thing that surprises me about that is, I don't know, did any of us really need this to know that it's true? I mean, I guess, you know, it's kind of like people that are say they've discovered Noah's Ark. Well, that proves there was a flood. And it was, well, you know, how about this big old book we've got called the Bible that pretty much tells us, if we're believers in God and are followers of Jesus Christ, that we already believe that what the Bible reveals and teaches is true. It's nice to have, you know, evidence. It's nice to find things that, but believe me, it just like if we were to find, really find, and I'm not talking about, you know, finding what Ken Ham built in Kentucky. I'm talking about finding Noah's Ark, you know, on Mount Ararat somewhere. There have been a lot of stunning archaeological discoveries that support what the Bible says. But people who are dedicated to skepticism of the existence of God, agnostics, atheists, they're not going to be convinced by that. That's not going to convince them. Now, maybe it gives comfort or encouragement to those of us who already believe. And I kind of look at this Laura Logan story as being the same thing. We've known since Rather Biased. Remember that? CBS, Rather Biased. Kind of a play on words with Dan Rather. You know when that came out, when that bumper sticker was on the back of cars? It was while I was living in Manning, South Carolina. That was back in the 1980s. It came out during the late 70s, right before the 1980 presidential election. But I think it was during Reagan's term that bumper sticker started showing up. So since then, people have pretty much realized that it's a stacked deck against conservative thought in the mainstream media, mainly because of the way that journalists are educated. They go to elite, Ivy League sometimes, but not just Ivy League, but some of the bigger known name, you know, state-sponsored universities, and they come out, voila, liberals. They go listen to Marxist socialist professors spout a lot of bad information about the United States and how, you know, we're the ruling class in America is really the bourgeoisie, and the poor proletariat needs to rise up and kick them out of the office. Well, this is that kind of mindset gets filtered down to the journalist that many times that rise up from that environment. And then we're surprised that they come out as being left-leaning and supporting Marxist ideas and following after the latest socialist Democrat candidate that decides to run for president, which has been the last couple of days, Bernie Sanders. So, you know, I'm just kind of surprised that people are surprised or all that interested in this. Here's what she said. She says, we become political activists in a sense. She's talking about journalists. And some could argue propagandist, right? Well, yeah. I mean, we've been saying that. Propagandist, as in somebody who's putting out propaganda is going further than political activism would be to pick a side, one side over the other, and advocate for the side that you have selected while you do what you can to undermine the other side. Propagandists take that a step further. They take information that, and they don't care whether it's true or false. In fact, most of the time, it's false information, and they spread an idea to cause you to doubt the side you're on by using false information. And so she's, you understand what she just said. And this is not some, you know, right-wing commentator coming from Fox or Breitbart. In fact, she praised Breitbart. She actually said that Breitbart was offering balance to what a lot of the rest of the media is. Now, that, I mean, I'm sure that caused heads to explode at the New York Times because they absolutely despise Breitbart or Drudge or any of the what they consider to be far beneath them journalistic endeavors. I mean, they think those people are bottom feeders. And here's somebody who's kind of in the club, or at least she was in the club, 60 Minutes. That's pretty high cotton for a journalist, for a TV journalist, a CBS. And now she's coming out and saying all this stuff, calling media members propagandist and activist. The media everywhere, this is her quote again, the media everywhere is mostly liberal, not just in the U.S., but in this country, 85% of journalists are registered Democrats. So that's just a fact, right? So the facts are on the side of what you just stated. Most journalists are left or liberal or Democrat or whatever word you want to give it. I always joke about the other 14% were too lazy to register. And there's maybe 1% that's on the right. There's one Fox, and there's many, many, many more organizations on the left. She said both sides do terrible things. Both sides lie. Both sides manipulate. Both sides push their point of view. But the problem is the weight of all these organizations on the one side of the political spectrum. When you turn on your computer or you walk past the TV or you see a newspaper headline in the grocery store, if they are all saying the same thing, the weight of that convinces you that it's true. You don't question it because everyone is saying it. She went on. You need at least two firsthand, what we talked about, the firsthand sources, and that's just not, that's not how it works anymore. So, yeah, it's a story. Yes, we should be concerned, but only because it's just a confirmation nail in the coffin of what we have known as conservatives for a long time, that we live and breathe and swim and work and play in an environment where the news media is going to be biased against any conservative ideas. The news media is preconditioned to hate Trump. They hate him because he's effective. They hate him because he's exposed them. They hate him because he hasn't followed the good old boy rules. I mean, the news media will abide a Republican establishment figure for a while and put up with the fact that the country elected a Republican establishment figure. But what they can't stand is somebody they can't control. The media is accustomed to making people, and after they've made them and they're through with them, they tear them down and cast them on the dust heap in the dustbin of history. The problem with this is the media has not been able to make Trump, therefore they can't take him down. at least not completely. At least it's taking them a long time to do it, much longer than it would a conventional politician. A lot of things about President Trump I don't like. One thing about President Trump that has been transformational when it comes to the political scene is the fact that he's been able to weather all of these attacks and stand up against a media dedicated to taking him out because they're not the ones that made him in the first place. 1-888-660-WLFJ, 888-660-9535. We'll be back in 3 minutes. Stay with us.
And here's your host, Dr. Tony Beam.
Well, I wonder what's going to happen with suspended Sheriff Will Lewis. I mean, now basically that the grand jury's come back and indicted him on a couple of charges. Now, these charges may not be as familiar to you as you think. I mean, I know what you've read in the paper about the possibility of him having an affair, going on a trip, taking his mistress or the person he was accused of having an affair with him, and all of this. Well, one of the charges that came out yesterday has to do with basically him lying about a background check that was never conducted. And so, I mean, please don't get me wrong. A lie is a lie. And as a public official, you particularly when it comes to things like background checks, you really can't do that. But as far as the sizzle behind all of this, it kind of doesn't meet the sizzle factor that you didn't complete a background check before you hired somebody. Bad, should do it, but not the kind of thing that spurs the water cooler talk. Did you hear? Hey, come on, did you? You know. Some of the other the stuff concluded in the other charge, however, is likely to be the more head-turning. A grand jury on Tuesday indicted, this is from the Greenville News, suspended Greenville County Sheriff, I should say, Will Lewis, on two criminal charges. He was charged with perjury and misconduct in office. Perjury charge is related to an affidavit Lewis signed in January 2017. He said a background check was performed on Derek Pendergrass, but Lewis knew a complete background investigation was not performed as required by law, according to an indictment. Pendergrass was a captain on the command staff and the sheriff's office under Lewis. He was not recommissioned when Sheriff Johnny Mack Brown stepped in as an interim after Lewis was suspended, according to Lieutenant Ryan Flood, spokesperson for the sheriff's office. The indictment for misconduct charge claims Lewis committed the crime of misconduct of a public office on or about January 3rd, 2017 through February 13th of 2018 by performing acts of official misconduct, habitual negligence, corruption, fraud, or oppression. You know, you remember the Andy Griffith Show where Barney comes out running against Andy for sheriff and he brings a bag and sets it up on the lectern and he says, "I have in this bag 77 incidences of malfeasance," or something like that. I know, 70-something. You know, "Do you know what your sheriff has in the trunk for emergency equipment? A shovel and a rake." You mean, this is a great show. I love it when Barney runs for office. And by the way, he could get elected to the Senate today in just about any state. But in a statement released Tuesday, 16th Circuit Solicitor Kevin Brackett said he had no further comment about the substance of the charges. Well, well, well. In other words, they don't want to show their hand before they get in the courtroom. It's important to remember that these indictments are merely allegations, and Mr. Lewis is presumed innocent until his guilt is established beyond a reasonable doubt. Yes, 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 we know that. Lewis lawyer Rosh Wise could not be reached for comment Tuesday by phone or by email. Probably a good idea. Statement released by Governor Henry McMaster's office Tuesday said the new indictments will have no effect on Lewis's status since the governor has already suspended Lewis. Yeah, I mean, what are you going to do? I double secret suspend you? The kind of like Animal House. You know, those boys have been on double secret probation since the beginning, so we'll put them on double suspension. There's really nothing else to do there. McMaster strongly believes Lewis should voluntarily step down from office and allow the people of Greenville County to elect its new sheriff. Well, you know, if you think you're innocent, I get that. I understand it's dirty laundry and it's, you know, not very nice to be hanging it out on the line here in Greenville. But if he thinks he's innocent and he's claiming that all of this is just, you know, people are after him or out to get him, or should I say it, that it's a witch hunt. If he really believes that, then, you know, he's not going to step down. He's going to go to court. He's going to fight and try to clear his name. Can he get a fair trial? I mean, could you find a jury, do you think, in Greenville County that doesn't know something about this? I mean, the details have kind of been out there. They've kind of been gone over. So I don't know. It might be a little bit hard. I don't know what his attorney's thinking, but, you know, you might want a change of venue. Where could you try this case that it might could be fair? Like, I don't know. Take it. Where in South Carolina could you get a fair trial for something like this? Where people maybe. How about down in Turbyville, South Carolina? Go to Turbyville. People down there care about stock car racing and, you know, stuff like that, fishing and hunting and
right.
Going out in the swamp to shoot ducks.
Looking for orange alligators.
Yeah, they're probably not too interested in a sheriff's office up here, so that might be a fair place to pick a jury. And by the way, I love Turbyville. I lived down there for 4 years, about a stone's throw from Turbyville.
Yeah, explains a lot. Yeah.
They've got is one of the best seafood places, used to be, in Turbyville. When Denise and I were first married, I mean, that was like when we got to go. I can't even remember the name of the place now. It's terrible. But when we got to go over there, that was a big deal. So it may be gone now. But anyway, Lewis has requested the investigation, after a former subordinate accused him of sexual assault, sexual harassment. You know, that's interesting. None of that seems to be included in this. I mean, if it was sexual assault or sexual harassment that he was being charged with, you would think that that doesn't fall under the category of fraud and negligence and those kind of things. Those are the kind of things that relate specifically to the way you're doing your job. It doesn't have anything to do with how you were interacting with other people necessarily. October 2017, Savannah Neighbors, the former assistant, filed a civil lawsuit alleging a sexual assault stemming from a work trip to Charlotte. In March of 2017, Lewis maintained that the extramarital encounter was consensual. A settlement for that lawsuit was reached in October. The details were not made public. Okay. So, in other words, we've got the sheriff saying, I'm not going to say. I'm saying that it was consensual. She says that it was assault. And we settled the lawsuit. She evidently got some money. And he gets to not say anything about it in public. A group of attorneys, including Wally Faso, I think. Golly, folks, I'm sorry about these people's names.
Come on, this is South Carolina.
Well, I know, but it's F-A-Y-S-S-O-U-X.
It's not from around here.
Faso Jr. and Beatty Ashmore had been. Now, there you go. There's a good South Carolina. Beatty Ashmore is a good South Carolina name. Had been representing Lewis pro bono against these charges. In December 2018, they withdrew as his counsel after a resolution couldn't be reached ahead of a trial. So they were trying to work out a deal to make it not go. When it went to trial, they said, "No, hey, we're out of here." And, well, you would think, to be fair, pro bono work, when you actually get into a trial, that's going to be tough if you're trying to run a law business. Mm-hmm. January 2019, with Wise as his attorney, Lewis asked the court to dismiss the criminal charges from April 2018. Those charges are pending, and each carries a maximum penalty of up to 10 years. Let's see. And then this kind of just goes through a timeline. So, anyway, we're going to be sitting here, I guess, in limbo as far as the sheriff's office is concerned. I mean, and I don't mean that as a dig against Johnny Mac Brown. He is... Sheriff Brown is doing a great job, interim sheriff, and he's certainly has the experience to be able to do the job until a new sheriff can be elected. But they can't do anything until Lewis resigns. And it doesn't look like he has any intention of doing that until, I mean, he's going to go through the trial here, unless there's going to be a plea deal. I mean, there's always probably negotiations going on with this. You know, if you're going to get in the fishbowl of public life, and you've got to really have to be careful about the way, obviously, that you conduct business, the things you say to people. It seems to me as an outside observer. I mean, I've met Will Lewis. He's been here on the program before when he was running for sheriff. Seemed like a really nice guy. Warmed up to him. When I was involved with campus security at North Greenville University, he was very helpful and cooperative and carried on a spirit of cooperation with campus security that we've had with other leaders, and certainly Johnny Mack Brown and others in Greenville County. So, that's what I know about him. But, you know, if you get a position like that, you have to be cautious. You have to be prudent. You have to analyze your decisions and make sure that the things that you're doing are well within line. And if you get into a position where you compromise yourself morally, then usually that's the beginning of the end. So we'll see. He's innocent until proven guilty. And that is the thing that we have to keep focusing on. These charges, the lawsuit, that was a totally separate issue. That shouldn't even be brought up in this trial because he's not accused of anything that the lawsuit settled. And even if it was, that's not supposed to have a bearing. So we'll take a break and come back. Stay with us. 1-888-660-WLFJ, 888-660-9535. Talk radio works better when you talk. We'd be glad to talk to you if you'll give us a call.
And here's your host, Dr. Tony Beam.
You know, I love great writing, and I'm not a great writer. I wish I was a great writer. I wish I was a great guitar player. Things that I seem to love, I don't seem to be able to do very well. Now, I'm a better writer than I am a guitar player, but in any event, the reason I say that is I'm listening to Charles Krauthammer's book, The Things That Are Most Important, or I can't remember the title of it, but I've been doing a lot of audiobook listening, and it's just fascinating. What it is, pretty much, is a collection of his. He actually has about five longer essays that he included in the book. But most of the book are his columns from various times at Time Magazine or at the Washington Post or wherever, because he was a syndicated columnist and his words appeared all over the country. But his writing is amazing in its precision, in its mastery and use of the English language, and just the way that, and its humor. I mean, he injects humor at a moment of mastering the language that really captures your attention. And yesterday I about ran off the road and he was writing about TSA and the way that they pat people down at airports. I mean, it was hilarious. So anyway, just recommend. I'd like to keep you up on the things that I'm listening to, reading, digesting. Reading Abraham Kupner. I'm reading one of his books right now, which I'm enjoying very much, plus Wisdom and Wonder, I think is the name of it. And then listening to Charles Krauthammer. Somebody just sent me this. I'm a pretty big Chuck Norris fan, and they sent me this meme. It's hilarious. It's a picture of Chuck Norris. It says, when Chuck Norris attends a feminist rally, he comes back with his shirt ironed. It's great. It's pretty big for Chuck Norris. There's a big column today at the Daily Signal by Josh Hammer that I think is going to ring true with a lot of people who get frustrated about all the hype when it comes to a Supreme Court justice nomination and confirmation process, particularly if it's somebody that's perceived to be on the right. And then it seems like liberals never get sold out on the Supreme Court. Never. I mean, think of a time when somebody who was touted somebody was appointed that was a card-carrying progressive. Think of the last time that they ended up becoming a conservative or being a conservative. Can you even think of a time? Now, maybe I missed it. Being a student of history, I probably need to go back and do some research on this to be sure. But I just don't think we've ever seen that, where a progressive You know, somebody that President Obama would appoint, or somebody that some other progressive would put on the court, ends up being, wow, look at this guy. He's actually pro-life. He's actually pro-Second Amendment. We thought he was a progressive. But we find the shoe on the other foot all the time. And Josh Hammer at the Daily Signal today, Daily Wire, is asking this question about John Roberts and Kavanaugh. So how many betrayals from Republican-nominated Supreme Court justices will it take to finally convince conservatives that the judicial deck is systematically stacked against us in such a way that we will simply never ultimately prevail? Harry Blackmun, who authored the murderous atrocity of Roe v. Wade, was a Republican judicial nominee. John Paul Stevens, a leftist lion for decades on the Supreme Court, was a Republican judicial nominee. Anthony Kennedy, who did more than anyone to disingenuously codify the homosexual rights agenda into the 14th Amendment, was a Republican judicial nominee. The infamous turncoat David Souter. Remember, he was appointed by George H.W. Bush, and he was supposed to be, you know, a constructionalist, somebody who really took the Constitution for what it says. He was turned out to be a progressive and was a Republican nominee. Alas, Chief Justice John Roberts was a Republican judicial nominee. And take some deep breaths, judicial supremacist Justice Brett Kavanaugh was a Republican judicial nominee. Democrats who nominate jurists based on the grotesque ruse of living constitutionalism and barely feign that their jurisprudence is inherently anything other than outcome determinative never miss with their Supreme Court nominee. Now, we just said that. I just asked. In baseball terminology, they're batting 1,000, and Republicans seem to be batting about 400. We got Thomas and Alito. We had Scalia. Scalia was a dependable constructionist conservative, and so is Alito and Thomas. But today, Roberts and Kavanaugh yet again demonstrated to the legal conservative movement the fallacy of putting all of our eggs in the alluring basket of the Supreme Court. In Moore versus Texas, released yesterday morning, the court summarily reversed the Texas Court of Appeals determination that Mr. Moore did not have intellectual disability and consequently was eligible for the death penalty. Summary reversal, as Ed Whelan notes at National Review's Bench Memos blog, is ordinarily reserved for situations in which a lower court clearly failed to abide by the court's precedents. But that clear failure to abide by precedent plainly didn't happen here. And the unsigned per curiam opinion in Moore today itself suggests as much. The opinion merely states that the Texas court's decision rest upon analysis too much of which it too closely resembles what we previously found improper. What? And as Justice Alito's dissent notes, each of the errors that the majority ascribes to the state court's decisions is traceable to the court's failure to provide a clear adjudicative rule in 2017 when Mr. Moore's case was last in front of the 9-robed oracles. So, the Supreme Court never should have summarily reversed the Texas Court of Appeals, but it gets worse. The Texas Court of Criminal Appeals determination had followed a previous remand from the Supreme Court in 2017, a remand order from which, crucially, Chief Justice Roberts dissented. But today, the Chief Justice concurred with the court's liberal bloc in vacating the Texas Court of Appeals determination that Mr. Moore is eligible for the death penalty. Put simply, the Chief Justice completely flipped his stance in the same case from 2 years earlier in order to side with the court's liberals. Now, that doesn't bode well for Chief Justice John Roberts and a conservative Supreme Court. Not because the death penalty is all of that big of a deal to conservatives, but it's a big deal that Roberts would completely change his opinion in the course of a year, decide to move from conservatives to liberals on the opinion about anything.